Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode, number 499, it's part two of my conversation with Carissa Lopez.
When I think of Jesus in his most distress right before the cross when he's in the garden, and he is so sad that his disciples can't be really present with him. And it's like his nervous system, you can see like there's a distress there, not because he doesn't trust God, but because he's in a human body. And it is comforting to be with others in those moments. And he was asking for that.
Last week, my friend Carissa Lopez, a licensed professional counselor, joined me and we had a conversation about adult attachment patterns. She introduced us to the concept and we spent a lot of time talking about secure attachment, which is the pattern that we long for. And she shared some loving behaviors that you could integrate into your parenting to help provide that security that your kids are looking for and that we as children were looking for and may not have received, which can sometimes lead us to some insecure attachment patterns. And one that we talked about was the dismissive pattern. Today, we're continuing the conversation. This is part two, and we're talking about another insecure attachment pattern, which is the preoccupied. We spent a little bit of time on the disorganized attachment, the most chaotic and the most rare of all of the attachment patterns. Then we spent a little time talking about how neurodiversity impacts the patterns that our children or that we ourselves may have obtained, and then intervention for each type, how to find healing, how to parent from a place of secure attachment, and ultimately how to find healing through community. It was in relationships that these patterns formed, and it is in relationships that we can heal. Also, make sure you check out the show notes because in it we have a link to Carissa's website where she has fantastic PDFs to help you see visually these different attachment styles and even the loving behaviors that you could integrate into your parenting. She has other PDFs from other times she's been on the show at that link. So make sure you check that out. All right, let's get right to it. Here we go. Okay, so dismissive. Anything else before we move on to the next one?
Just in the population, like 65% of the population is securely attached.
That's a big percent.
That's a big percent. The majority of us are.
And we might have moments of dismissive moments or...
Absolutely.
Or the other one you're about to say.
One way to think about secure attachment is we have kind of a prototype of secure attachment. Man, things were so ideal. Our parents just kind of crushed it in our temperament, our personality and circumstances. Everything lined up and like, man, just do it. Like everything just worked really well. Most of it, I don't know that I've met anyone that really is this prototype. There's part of me that's like, I think that's heaven. I think we get there and we look around and we're like, I like my life and I like everyone and I like me and this is great.
Yeah.
But in terms of a spectrum beyond the prototype, we have people that are securely attached with dismissive tendencies, securely attached with preoccupied tendencies. And then we have people that are like 20% of the population is truly dismissively attached. And then we've got... The numbers are a little like 10, 15% that are preoccupied. And then we've got 5%, this last percentage, which is the disorganized attachment. And that's the most rare. And so I think even for all of us as we're listening, it's like, okay, I'm somewhere on that spectrum. Most likely you're securely attached with some tendencies. Because especially when we're getting into the preoccupied pattern, there was probably some scary stuff that was happening when you were a child. Because, so we're talking about preoccupied attachment. One of the hallmarks of that is we have a parent who probably has quite a bit of fear. And this is probably coming from their own childhood experiences. There may have been abuse. There may have been neglect. There may have been significant scary things that happened around them or to them. And so what they experienced was a parent who was inconsistently available to them. And so sometimes when they were especially scared, if they're feeling scared or distressed, they would actually experience a lot of presence from the parents. But it happens in a way that the child, if you think of anxiety as a type of energy, the child is having their own anxiety. So there's a lot of energy in their system. And then you have a parent who moves towards them because the last thing they want their child to experience is anxiety, but they have their own anxiety around the child's anxiety. So you've got the kid's energy is a lot, and then you have the parent who has a lot of anxious energy. And what we do is kind of supercharge the energy inside of the child. And so we create this kind of attachment pattern of like, when you have a child that's scared and anxious, we actually get a ton of attention from the parent, which then creates more anxiety. So it kind of creates this anxiety in the child. And what the parent is inadvertently teaching the child is, when you're scared, when you're mad, when you're super sad, I'm actually going to hyper attune and give a lot of attention to that, which then we're training the child, gosh, when I'm having these big distressing feelings, mom and dad tend to give in. They tend to like show up for me in a way that enables that, instead of what I would often say to this kind of pattern is like, we actually need to be more nonchalant about it. Like I can like be with parent, you.
As a parent,
we need to be more nonchalant. It's like, it is a nightmare. We don't need to over-attune to that. It's a nightmare. This is hard. I'm so sorry. Okay. Let me rub you back away. You fall back to sleep instead of like, tell me all the details of the nightmare. Oh, let's like talk about all the pieces of this. And then it's like, this is us adding to the anxiety in the system.
And then what is that like pattern? So that's as a child. What does that pattern look like in the teen years and then as an adult?
Yeah. So let's see, relationally, how this would show up in a preoccupied is we are going to expect our friends and our significant others to take care of our anxiety. So when we are distressed, when we are struggling, the expectation is you're going to show up and help solve that. Like, I need you to soothe me. I need you to regulate me. And there isn't an ownership of, oh, my anxiety is my problem. If I am lonely, that is for me to solve. And we also notice a preoccupation. So there's that, that's that word for the pattern, a preoccupation for all of the emotions. So it's like, there's a lot of attention that is being given to my big emotions. And I could spend the whole time talking about all of these feelings that I'm having and not really resolve them, because as soon as they're resolved, there's another big thing that is taking all of my attention. And I'm constantly wanting my partner or friends to attune to me and help solve those problems and take away, like really take away the distressing feeling. Because preoccupied, they can't tolerate distress. So as soon as there's a lot of distress, they're needing to be soothed and comforted. And they're always like, I need more coping skills. I need more coping skills. Like they need to figure out how to solve this instead of an accepting of like when we're more securely attached, it's kind of like, I had a bad day. And I can be like, well, that was a bad day. I'm going to go home, watch my show, eat some comfort food, snuggle with my spouse. And then tomorrow will be a new day. Whereas preoccupied, it's like the world is over. I need to change everything. I need a new expert. I maybe need a new therapist. Or I need to check in with my psychiatrist. It's like everything is getting rearranged.
And then as a mom, how would you be parenting from that place?
So as a mom, what tends to happen is kind of a role reversal starts happening, because the child at some point also becomes aware, my mom or dad is also anxious, because they can sense the parent's own anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so because the parent is coming with anxiety and fears about the world and safety and all of this, the child then starts comforting the parent. So these are parents who might overshare about adult problems or talk about adult problems in front of their children. They might be on the phone. And it's like, these parents will tell me, well, they accidentally overheard me on the phone. And I'm like, you were on speakerphone in your car. Like that is, yeah, they're going to overhear you. And so there's a sense of the adult, because they are struggling to manage their own emotions around whatever's going on in life, it starts leaking out and the kids are noticing it and they're picking up on it. And then the kid is trained to, I actually need to know everything that's going on with my mom or dad, because the more data I have, the more I think I'm going to be able to control or fix this. And so the kid goes into more of a parental or co-spouse role or co-parent. These are the kids who are trying to be the co-parents of the siblings in a more extreme way. And so that's part of, so some of that role confusion shows up. These kids the more adult data they have, the more they feel like they do know what needs to happen and they are going to be speaking into it. And they're going to be openly disagreeing with parents about like, no, this is what needs to happen. And it's like, okay, there's that role confusion showing up. Mm-hmm. I think the last thing about this one would also be like, if we've got a preoccupied pattern, there's a sense of clinginess. And like, you're always going to know where this child is because they are so demanding of your attention, because what has happened is they gain security by being really close. And so there's going to be a sense of, as a parent, you're going to be like, this child is clingy. They're always on me. I need some space from them. So you're going to feel exasperated and like, I just need a break all the time. So that's another piece of that pattern.
If you are securely attached and your spouse is, can you have a child that has a preoccupied attachment style?
So that's a good question. The research would say no. Like if you have securely attached parents and there's not like a huge traumatic event, like you would typically be creating securely attached children. Now that is where trauma can majorly impact. But even when we're talking about trauma, like difficult events are only difficult events if you have a securely attached parent, because you go through a difficult event. And if I'm not alone with it, then it doesn't become trauma. But if I go through a really difficult event and no one showed up for me or I felt missed, then I felt alone with the difficult event, that is actually what becomes trauma. Huh. So technically, if we're securely attached and we go through something difficult, it doesn't even become trauma. And so we should see the secure attachment pattern continue in the life of that child.
It's so interesting because you hear people say, this was a trauma. This was a little T trauma. This is a big T trauma. It's like, life is difficult. Mm-hmm. Life is difficult. Not everything has to then get that status.
Yes.
In our story.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to.
Well, and with the insecure patterns, when there is a difficult event, that is where you see it becomes trauma, because they didn't have a parent who was able to attune to them. They had a parent that made it worse or kind of withdrew or just tried to solve fix it. And then that is how the child ends up feeling alone in it.
So on to the last one, that is the smallest percentage. And if you have a preoccupied attachment, it's very unlikely that you also have this. So,
right. That's true. We only have one pattern. We really do only have one pattern. Now, sometimes our patterns can like shift depending on who we're in relationship with, because they bring out different flavors in us. But typically we have one pattern. So the disorganized pattern. So this is kind of the most confusing to experience, because it can feel very predictable in how unpredictable it is when you're engaging with this person. And typically this is someone who had significant abuse, significant neglect, really difficult life circumstances. And what's confusing is disorganized pattern. This is the majority of our homeless population.
Yeah.
And we can have people that have a kind of different flavor to the disorganized pattern, which would look like, because they had a dysfunctional home growing up, they actually had to use strategies from the preoccupied side and the dismissive side. So they have learned how to get needs met both ways. And if you're in relationship with someone who's getting their needs met both ways, it can feel very confusing, because sometimes they're moving towards and are feeling clingy and I need you to soothe me and meet my needs. And then sometimes they're withdrawing and they're like, I need you to pursue me, because I don't feel like my needs matter and I need you to communicate to me that my needs matter. And so that can be very confusing to be on the other end of that. But we can see some people with the disorganized attachment pattern who are more adaptable, even though they're using two different strategies, they have become more adaptable. So they might be very successful in life, but maybe people on their inner circle can be a little confused about like, gosh, I feel like it is unpredictable how I'm experiencing you. But the more extreme version of that is going to be kind of show up as like easily triggered. You're going to notice the explosive behaviors and the chaotic behaviors, and the huge emotions, the meltdowns, the big, these are people who would maybe do a big scene. And I kind of think of this as like, this is the master of survival. This is someone who they have learned every single strategy and how to get their needs met. And they do not want to be controlled, because when other people were in control, bad things happened to them. And so they will use their strategies to get their needs met, but they do not want to be controlled. And so that's where you're going to see this hitting up against of authority, where if you're trying to manage them or they feel at all like you're trying to tell them what to do, you're going to get a lot of big reaction from them. And when you're working with someone who's in this disorganized pattern, one of the main things to just kind of keep in mind is like, it's going to get in you and on you and inside of you. And it's, you're going to feel chaotic and you're going to feel hopeless and you're going to feel powerless. That's what they feel all the time. And so for you to stay in your own body and your own mind, you're going to need a team of people who are like, you're a grown-up. You know exactly what to do. Like when I'm working with this type of client, I have to go to my consult group and they're like, wait a minute, you are actually a professional. You know exactly what to do. And I'm like, oh yeah, I do. And so that team support becomes super, super important when we have a kid that falls into this category. We need a lot of support because it can feel really chaotic inside of us engaging with this pattern.
Can you spend a tiny bit of time? You and I have talked about this, but for the child who is neurodivergent, who is struggling to even notice that the need has been met, mm-hmm. like whether it's a child on the autism spectrum and like eye contact, like they're not even seeing that you're attuning or feeling or noticing in relationships, friendships outside of parents, like, and these patterns get set. Talk to the parent in that situation.
Okay. And this is a really good point, because neurodiversity and other diagnoses like anxiety that could mimic some of the pieces of these different patterns that we're hearing, but mm-hmm. truly, and this is when it's really helpful for the parents to know what their pattern is. Because if we can identify kind of like, what is the parent's pattern? And then we're seeing a lot of emotional dysregulation from the child, it kind of clues us to there is something else going on here. And it is not necessarily that the child is like this disorganized pattern. It's like, if they're experiencing a lot of emotional dysregulations, are we looking at an autism diagnosis? Are we looking at a sensory processing disorder? Are we looking at an ADHD diagnosis that had maybe got missed, or there's not maybe a good medication management happening with some of these? Because that's a lot of the clients that I see, is like, I have parents that are showing up and I'm like, I think these are good enough parents. And that's kind of a clinical term, good enough. That's that hitting the mark 30% of the time.
Like securely attached 30% of the time is a good enough parent.
Yes. And so I have these good enough parents showing up in my office. And then we have these children that are like extremely emotionally dysregulated and they're really struggling and they're wreaking a lot of havoc in the home. And that's when I'm like, okay, there's probably some parenting tweaks we can do if we're identifying these insecure patterns, but also there's probably also a diagnosis that's happening. It's usually both of those things happening at the same time.
I just wanted parents who are listening who are like, I am doing my best. I'm responding. And it is like not being received.
Yeah.
You are not alone. And that's always good to hear. Okay. Can we get into some intervention or like
Absolutely.
Help? Because it can also feel hopeless if you're like, man, wow, I didn't recognize I've got this pattern, or I'm seeing this pattern in our home. Anyway.
Yeah. And I think especially like you kind of mentioned, like the self-awareness, like start with yourself. There's things that we can do to help heal some of these patterns inside of us. And I'm a big fan of, I think we were designed to be in community with each other. Our nervous system is literally designed to feel more soothed when we're safely connected to other people. And so the more that we can also be practicing these interventions with others is like exponentially more healing, I think. So the dismissive pattern, I think some of the main things to really focus on this first one, I'm like, they hate it when I say this, but it's like, have fun. You got to have fun.
If you have the dismissive pattern, your focus is to have fun.
That would be a good intervention. Like, okay. Do some things that are just for the joy of it. Okay. And they may have trouble even tapping into what is joy. Like, what does it feel to just enjoy doing something because they are so focused on achievement and productivity and they're so used to taking emotions offline that they're like, happy. Well, I'm happy all the time. And it's like, well, you don't, your face doesn't show that and you're not laughing much.
And it's what brings them joy, not what they think their kids will enjoy or their spouse will enjoy.
Right.
And is it with other people? Because I could think something's real fun and I try to bring my people along and it's not anymore because yeah. I'm trying to convince them it's fun and they're sucking yeah. the joy out of it. This is for me to enjoy by myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that can be a huge part of it.
Okay.
Movement is really helpful for dismissive, like moving their body, getting good exercise is like huge for this group. Really doing the work to be able to identify their own feelings and needs and desires and being in charge of getting those met instead of waiting for someone else to do it is so important. And that can be quite a journey when we have our whole lives historically been told, you can't feel these things, you can't have these emotions, ignore that and suppress needs, desires, feelings, to all of a sudden start identifying those and feeling those. That can be a little overwhelming sometimes. And then not only to feel them and notice them, but then to bring them and say, these are important and I do need to meet them. And it is my responsibility to do that instead of waiting for someone else to do it for me can be important. And then I think one of the other huge parts of the dismissive pattern is learning interdependence. Instead of being hyper independent, I don't need anyone, I can do it on my own. This sense of who can come alongside me and will I let them come alongside me? Is it okay if doing something together means we're slower and it's messier? But like being in relationship and being interdependent is something to cultivate and value. That would be another one of those interventions.
That's really good. Yeah, I think of like all the, maybe this pattern was because people didn't provide this secure attachment needs you had, but there are people available. 65% of people who are securely attached. And even if they're not, if you're learning this together, like how many recovery groups have you and I been a part? You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Celebrate Recovery or 12-step or great groups to learn, safe places to learn how to name your feelings and what you need.
Yeah.
And have those needs met.
Well, and I do think, especially with dismissive pattern, sometimes the best place to start is going to be in a group, which I think can feel really threatening because yeah. imagining going into a group can feel like there's going to be a lot of needs I need to attune to, or that can feel overwhelming with just how many people. But
yeah.
if we have someone with this dismissive pattern in a group, they also are not going to feel like such a burden because they can maybe share whatever the problem is. What's the need? What's the desire? What's happening inside of them? And there are 8 other people who are capable of containing that, holding that desire, being with them in it. And that feels way less threatening than one-on-one. Like yeah. if I'm just telling you my need, there's so much risk that you are not going to be able to show up for me. But if I'm telling 8 people, the risk lowers because surely one of them is going to be able to show up for me. And so groups can be so helpful for dismissive patterns because getting that practice of bringing our needs into community and being met by community is so healing.
Yeah. I can attest.
Me too.
People often say they're like, Heather, you're in so many groups. Like I spent so much time not mm-hmm. being a team player. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm like. I'm terrible at team sports. I'm terrible. Like, huh. I wonder why.
Yeah. And me too. I think I spent a lot of time like trying to figure out life on my own and feeling like I had to put a mask on to be in community, and groups were the place where I was like, oh, the mask can come off. We're all agreeing. We're taking off the masks. We're doing life together. We're admitting where we're failing, where we're struggling, where we're afraid. And I don't get abandoned and no one tries to take over either. They're just with me in it. And I feel loved and seen and known in the midst of my difficulty.
And these are groups where there's well-established boundaries mm-hmm. of what it means to show up to the group.
Yes.
I don't think this is – like some people do small groups and it's not
Right.
That.
Yes.
I just want to clarify. Like when we say groups, we're talking about these recovery groups where there are rules of engagement.
Yes.
Rules of when you talk, when you don't talk, how you respond.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about healing attachments, that's actually one of the main ways that we can heal attachment is safe groups or safe places where there are guidelines and expectations and an invitation, whether that's a therapist is leading that, whether that's celebrate recovery, whether that's AA, those can be really helpful to our attachment pattern to like experience people in those settings.
Okay. What about for preoccupied?
Okay. So for preoccupied, ways that we can get some healing with that. Two of my favorite things to talk about with preoccupied attachment is distress tolerance. So learning to tolerate my distress, learning, and then radical acceptance. Life is not going to be the way I want it to be. And I really need to practice accepting life as it is so that I'm not derailed. Every time something goes wrong, it derails me. And I'm having all these big emotions and I can't focus and do the next thing I need to do. And so radical acceptance and distress tolerance are two really key concepts where I can notice my emotions. They aren't me. They're not going to destroy me. I can allow the emotion to come up and move through me, and then I can keep going. Those are two of my favorite concepts for preoccupied attachment. And that falls under the umbrella of dialectical behavioral therapy. And so dialectical behavioral therapy. Those two concepts come from that. And there are lots of therapists who are amazing at working with those concepts. And I think, gosh, figuring out those is a huge piece of having more peace inside of us. And the more regulated we are, then the more we're able to tolerate and show up for other people in our life. So those are two huge concepts for preoccupied pattern.
I'm imagining, like, let's say these are your patterns and you are a believer and you're like diligent in your Bible study, diligent in your prayer, and these patterns aren't changing because you're doing those things in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
With Jesus, obviously, with Jesus. But I feel like it just needs to be said, those things have value and it is valuable to be aware of how we're made, how people we've interacted with in the past can impact how we're interacting in the present and how there is hope in the future through people. Like God gave us the body of believers. That is a key part of our faith. And so not to collapse in shame if you continually keep going to the Bible studies and nothing is changing in those patterns, like it's okay to pursue therapy, to go to these recovery groups or other safe groups. Like, I don't know. Sometimes we think it's like faith alone. It's like, well, Jesus was in a group.
Mm-hmm. Truly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The Trinity is a group.
Yeah. When I think of Jesus in his most distress right before the cross, when he's in the garden and he is so sad that his disciples can't be really present with him. And it's like his nervous system, you can see like there's a distress there, not because he doesn't trust God, but because he's in a human body. And it is comforting to be with others in those moments. And he was asking for that.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a need.
Yeah.
Jesus had a need for a relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. What else with preoccupied beyond that? What it was the type of therapy?
Dialectical behavioral therapy.
So maybe if a person is gone through the adult attachment interview, discover that they have preoccupied, wants to get therapy, they should ask a therapist, are you familiar with that type?
Yeah. And it's very well known. It's easy to access in most communities. Like if you do a search on Psychology Today and you're putting in therapist in your zip code and you want DBT, like you're going to probably get some hits.
D? What are you saying?
D, dialectical. B, behavioral. T, therapy.
DBT. Okay.
Yeah. So also for preoccupied pattern. So I think this is maybe difficult to hear if this is your pattern. but other people are going to experience you as intrusive. And you are going to be saying, I am just trying to help. And my goal is I want everyone to be safe and happy. And so I am moving into situations and moving into relationships and moving into problems. And they all become, I'm willing to take those on and try and solve them for people or give you lots of ideas or advice about how to do that. And I'm going to have a lot of opinions about how everyone else should be doing life. And again, it is coming from a place of I want security and stability and health in all of my loved ones, because if they are that way, then they're going to be able to show up for me that way. And that's what I really want. And so it's coming from this place of like wanting to have their own needs met and truly wanting safety and health for the people around them. But people are experiencing it as intrusive. And so it's learning to tolerate being a witness to our children, being a witness to our spouse, being a witness to our friends, being a witness to the school PTA, like learning to, it is not my job. I can watch someone have their own experience, make their own mistakes, do it differently than I would want them to do it. And even though that is hard for me to tolerate, just witnessing it instead of getting involved, that would be a huge key intervention for this pattern.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times moms that might have that pattern look like really involved good moms.
Yes.
If you have experience, maybe you are a mom who works outside the home, you cannot sign up for the PTA or whatever, and you're feeling guilt and shame because this other mom is doing all the things, always up at school, always coordinating social things for the kids. And it might be helpful to hear, like, it might not be healthy that that might be a preoccupied attachment style.
Yeah.
It may not be. It may just be a secured mom who's – that's where she's finding her identity and worth. But – if you're experiencing it as intrusive or like it could be.
It could be. Yeah. When I think another way that intrusiveness can show up and be perpetuated from parent to child is if my child is having a lot of relational difficulties, like they're struggling in friendships and struggling in relationships. Part of this is probably coming from their friends are also experiencing them as intrusive. Like I have one client that I worked with and she was like, this is how I show love, by getting involved and solving people's problems. And I'm like, I don't think you, like, I get that because that's what happened to you, but that is not how other people are experiencing that. So when we have this kind of pattern operating in the family system, we have a kid who's struggling with relationships, this mom or dad might be like, yeah, that other kid is the worst. And there's not a pause to sit with the child and be like, how are you contributing to the volatility of the relationships that you keep finding yourself in? There's kind of an immediate, my child is not the problem. I need to solve this problem. And this is the parent that would maybe move into excluding other children at a birthday party or doing something like that because they're trying to manage the situation on behalf of the child. I want my child to have a good, happy birthday party. And that means excluding XYZ because they're not safe. They're going to like create chaos or something. And so that kind of a vibe can show up with the preoccupied attachment.
Yeah. Yes. It's an interesting thing to think through how anxiety and the need to feel secure and the need to feel like I'm taken care of fits into mothering so easily and seamlessly. And again, can get applauded.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, she's such a good mom. Did you see how she blah, 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 like, anyway.
Yeah. And also to help keep removing shame from this, it's like we developed these patterns, honestly, like they came from a need to survive and get our needs met. And until we have corrective experiences in other relationships and we're open to noticing our patterns and wanting to do something different, we're going to perpetuate it. And every person on the planet does this unless we pause and we have these corrective experiences to do something different.
Well, and I can imagine this mom too, who might be having this preoccupied pattern, is exhausted.
all the time. Yeah.
And because most often you're meeting everyone's needs and no one really honestly is going to meet your needs for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you ask for it or you're aware of your needs or you explicitly say, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what intervention do you have for the disorganized?
Okay, so this one, again, is going to benefit from community. I'm going to say that for everybody. Everyone's going to benefit from the safe community.
Don't wall alone.
Don't wall alone. Really having a lot of structure, a lot of routine is really important because that stability, predictability is going to create a sense of safety and reduce the chaos. And so making sure you're putting yourselves into environments where that is the norm. Because sometimes when our nervous system is so used to chaos, we keep putting ourselves in those situations because that feels familiar. And we know what to do with chaos, but that's not the way to live life. And so in order for us to have a different kind of life, we actually have to experience the discomfort of what might feel boring or routine. But that is actually what's going to reduce the chaos and stress that's going to allow us more space to heal and be more of aware of our needs and get them met in healthier ways. So that would be part of the disorganized pattern, like things that would be healing. I think frequent therapy, other types of outside supports are going to be essential for this pattern because they're going to need help organizing their mind and helping provide those corrective experiences. Like they experience so much dysfunction growing up that their gauge for what is normal or a good healthy response may not actually live inside of them. And so they're going to need someone from the outside to be like, hey, if I was your mom, this is what I would do. Or if I wish your dad had shown up for you in this way instead, to give them more of a template of what does healthy relationship look like. So they're going to need a lot of time and space to regulate. And again, they're going to have to really learn those tools from someone else. But then it does become their job to implement those to take care of themselves. And they can't put that on somebody else. So even though we want safe community and we want interdependence at the end of the day, we still have to own our behaviors and our emotions and our reactions and really be practicing taking care of our little self inside that didn't get their needs met and realizing I'm the one that can now meet my own needs. Like I'm the one who shows up for my little child inside and that I am a big grown up. And I do have money and I do have a car and I have a phone that I can pick up and call someone. So it's like recognizing that we're in a grown-up body and we have access to resources that we didn't have when we were a child. We're not stuck. We're not trapped. We don't have to be alone, but we're kind of creating some new patterns of taking care of ourselves that we didn't get when we were little.
So good. Well, and I told you, I know we've done this in two parts. And y'all might be heading into Thanksgiving or the holidays, or you might plan on seeing family of origin that you don't see except for the holidays. And my hope and prayer is, if anything, you gain more grace for yourself and for others, and maybe even an understanding of your childhood experience. Like maybe like it brings some clarity on the why, or I don't know. Like for me, it just brought a little bit of organization to my brain in a lot of different relationships when I learned this from you. So to get curious and to read more, is there like a go-to resource if people want to learn more on adult attachment patterns?
Yes. So resources I would recommend for learning more about attachment. So I'm going to have the infographics that I've developed that kind of are an easier visual to kind of look at the different patterns. We'll make those available. And then if there's a book that is written for non-professionals, which is people who are interested in learning about this, I would recommend Secure Relating by Sue Marriott and Ann Kelly. That is a great one for just kind of conceptualizing attachment and if you want to read more about it.
So good. Well, we always love time with you, Chris, or at least I do. I really do. Here. Always love being with you. So thank you again for coming on the show and teaching us all. It's so amazing. It's amazing.
Thank you. Well, I love being with you and with your crew out in the virtual world. So thanks for having me on.
Okay, definitely go to those show notes if you haven't already and find Carissa's link to those beautifully designed PDFs for all the attachment patterns and even those loving behaviors. And if you haven't listened to other episodes with Carissa, there are more beautiful graphics from our conversation on window of tolerance and play therapy. Anyway, go check out that link. I don't know if we said it in these conversations, but Carissa did give me the adult attachment interview, and the type that I was given, the pattern that I use in interactions, is secure, but with preoccupied tendencies. And it's super helpful just to have that information so I can be aware, so I can work through it in my different groups that I'm a part of and with God. And then I think for all of you, no matter where you find yourself, that you can trust there is a way to get to earned secure attachment. We said it so many times, this is not a fixed thing. And so our hope is that knowledge helps you and grows you, and you're continually in process, all of us. And so that hope continues to draw you closer to God. So I'm going to pray over us. Lord, I thank you again that you made us to be in relationships. I thank you for your Spirit's power in our life and how people and your Spirit can help us grow and become more and more as you intended. I pray for anyone listening who is working through the heart of their childhood and a pattern that they're grieving, Lord, that you're grieving. I pray that you would be that present comfort, the grace that they need to continue to seek you. I pray that we would have eyes to see how our behaviors impact others, how we show up for others when we're overreaching and when we are walking away because of discomfort. I pray that we could draw inspiration from how you are with us, God, and your presence and your security. I thank you that you are always with us and that you don't go anywhere, and you are not pushy. You don't force your way on us. You allow us to come to you. And Jesus' name, amen. All right, y'all, I don't know if you heard it at the very beginning of this episode, I said 499. So that means next week is episode 500. And it's super special. I have a couple things going on. One is I've invited back my friend Leslie Johnson, who was my very first interview. I also have little clips from y'all listeners and how the show is helping you not mom alone. So join me back here next Monday. If you're not subscribed, this would be a great time to just hit that button so it pops up in your favorite podcast player. All right. See you next week. Adios. Bye. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.